Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. Information, visit sasquatch.com. Hi, this is Sasquatch, and I'm Seth Breedlove. Today I'm joined by Brian Brown of the NAWAC and the seminal Bigfoot podcast, The Bigfoot Show. He also did a podcast called The Bipcast, Bigfoot Information Project? Or yes. Podcast.
No, okay. Bigfoot Information Project podcast. It was the Bipcast.
Gotcha. Yeah. Two P's. Anyway, Brian is with me today to talk about Bigfoot. And Brian, now that we're live and I'm actually recording, we gotta break this.
Did you say the Bigfoot show was seminal?
Seminal, yeah.
That sounds dirty. It's not dirty, right?
It could be. It depends on how you want to read it.
Okay.
I was actually talking about the Native American tribe.
The Seminoles. Oh, I get you.
Seminoles.
Sure, that makes perfect sense now. Now that you explain it.
Brian, why don't you tell us, though, a little bit about the Bipcast and the Bigfoot show and how all that came to be?
I'll try to do it in the I'll do the as short as possible. Yeah, sure. To know about the Bipcast, you have to roll back a little bit to the Bigfoot forums, which I started the Bigfoot forums back in 2002 because I wanted to have a place to talk to people about Bigfoot, because there really weren't any. There were some forums out there that were Bigfoot related. They didn't have very good features and they were run by dictators. And so I just said, let's start something different. And really, I just wanted to talk to people about the subject. And that evolved over time to, of course, going out into the woods. And I grew up in Southern California. I grew up in Los Angeles. Never went camping in my life until 2003. First time I ever went camping. And I started going out into the woods with these people that I met on the internet. Now, just tell your wife sometime, hey, honey, I'm going to go hang out in the woods with people I met on the internet that I've never seen before in my life.
I've been there.
Yeah. So anyway, we started doing that. And I got this sort of like itch to want to like tell some of these stories and put this information out there. Because, you know, the forums are really bad for delivering information, because they're just a mess and there's all kinds of people talking, and you know, I think that they're a great place to go to have a conversation, and if you want to like pull through all the crap, there's good resources in there typically, or there were in the old BFF, but they're bad at delivering information. So I wanted to come up with a way to sort of like encapsulate stuff and deliver it. So that started the Bigfoot Information Project podcast. I'm sorry, the Bigfoot Information Project website, where I posted articles and interviews and things like that. And then that, I was really interested in podcasting, which was fairly new at that point. So I was going out to Washington State near Skookum Meadow, and I was going to be out there with Rick Knoll. And so I'd done a few Bipcasts interview style, sort of like the Bigfoot show. I did Scott Harriet was on show number one. And then I did Kathy Moskowitz Strain. She was Kathy Moskowitz at the time. And then I was out in the field with Rick Knoll. And I didn't know what I was doing. I just started recording him talking. And it probably goes on too long. And it wasn't edited very well. But I just wanted to tell these stories. And I think that's kind of what keeps me going to this day. I like talking about the subject. I like telling people what I know about the subject, which is a lot more now than it was in 2003, to be perfectly honest with you. So I just like telling the stories, and I like hearing the stories, and I like talking about the subject. So that's kind of how that all happened. And then the Bigfoot show specifically, I wanted to keep doing things like the Bipcast, but the Bipcast, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, is a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. It takes, you know, to go places, blah, 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 to do it the way I want to do it. It's kind of a big deal. So the best part of going out and looking for Bigfoot, I always thought was sitting around the campfire at night talking to these people. So the Bigfoot show was supposed to feel like that. It was supposed to feel like just some people sitting around the campfire having the conversations that only happen around the campfires. It's kind of turned into something a little different than that, but that was the original concept.
I think it still has that tone. That's one of the reasons I like that show, is there's no, it's not strictly formatted. It's basically you guys just rambling at each
Pretty
other,
much.
Which
yeah.
I enjoy.
You either dig that or you don't.
Yeah. And it's so different from the average Bigfoot podcast, I guess even such as mine, which is pretty much just, you know, a couple guys blabbing about nonsense. What got you?
That sounds exactly like the Bigfoot show.
Well, yeah, yeah, but you guys are actually funny and that's entertaining.
That's kind of you to say.
And sane. At least a few of you are sane. So what?
Three quarters.
Yeah, exactly. Not Scott, but what got you into the whole topic of Bigfoot? Or I mean, is it something you grew up interested in?
Oh, totally. I mean, I grew up in the 70s, right? So if you grew up in the 70s, especially if you grew up in California in the 70s, you know, Steve Austin was out in the forest fighting Bigfoot when I was growing up in the state that I lived in, right? So that was really interesting. I had I loved the $6 Million Man. I loved the Bigfoot episodes. There was In Search Of happening at that point. There was, of course, Boggy Creek, which was very influential. And when I was a kid, I saw it several times. So and then again, being in that area and you know, my parents would take vacations up into Central California, Northern California. My grandparents lived in Oregon and we would go up into Washington. So just being in that place, and every time you get out of the car, back then anyway, it's probably still the same. I got my first Bigfoot book on a road trip. And it was one of these, like, you know, rotating metallic wire magazine rack type book displays at some rest stop. And they had a bunch of crap in there. And one of them was John Green's The Sasquatch Files. That was my first Bigfoot book. And it's very simple. It's just every sighting he had at that point in a book. And so I remember sitting in the backseat of the car just reading that thing and then reading it again and reading it again and just going, this is crazy. Like, there's hundreds of people that have seen this thing. It isn't like what they showed on the $6 Million Man. You know, it wasn't just a thing. It wasn't an animal. They were everywhere, you know. They were all up and down the coast. And so that really sparked something in my mind at that point. And I love mysteries. I love discovery. I love thinking that we don't know everything at this point. It's one of my biggest frustrations when you have conversations on the internet or people that think that we as humans have figured out all the cool stuff already. And I love thinking that we haven't, that there's still stuff out there worth talking about and looking into. And if you think about it, there are a few things left in especially in North America. If you want to go look for a genuine mystery, if you want to be out in the wilderness and doing something that's genuinely interesting, like looking for Bigfoot, that's about all that's left, unless you want to look for a chupacabra or something. But I mean, it's just you know, it's mystery, it's the unknown, it's discovery, it's all good stuff.
So you're as I mentioned with the BFS guys, you're a fairly, at least to my eyes, a sane, normal, well-adjusted guy.
I try to come off that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you do a good job faking it.
Thanks.
So I was watching the interview with what's his name, Bobcat Goldthwait, on Jimmy Kimmel. I think it was.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Jimmy mentions at some point he finds it odd that Bobcat is into the subject, because Bobcat seems like a pretty normal dude, and he says something about how the average person isn't the average person that's, I'm paraphrasing here, but isn't the average person that's into Bigfoot kind of out there.
Right.
So where do you think that stigma comes from, and what can we do to get rid of it?
I think it's the media, because it's a shortcut. It's tabloid journalism where a lot of it comes from, I think. You know, Bigfoot's carrying my baby kind of crap. What can we do about it? I'm sure you have the same experience that I have, that Bobcat had. You know, when someone discovers that you're into Bigfoot, they're like, you're into this Bigfoot stuff? Mm-hmm. I think all you can do, well, there's one thing you can do. You can prove that the animal's real. Boom, done. If you do that, but you know, less than that, if you don't actually want to do that, or don't have the means or the time or the luck or whatever, I think it's just you remain normal and sane. And I think that, you know, it's one of the reasons I don't like the word Bigfoot, because I think Bigfoot has this connotation of, you know, the Weekly World News and stuff like that. And it's a silly name with too much baggage. And, part of, you know, my day job is, one of the things I do is work on branding for companies and for products. And so I know words have power, and I think about words all the time and the significance of them, and the word Bigfoot has always kind of bugged me, even though I had the Bigfoot forums and the Bigfoot show, you know, I mean, but it's very convenient shorthand, but I think that the word itself is a problem. And so recently I've started using the term wood ape instead to describe the animal. But I think to answer your original question, just continue to be a sane, reasonable person. Mm-hmm. I can, if someone will give me 15 minutes and an open mind, I can get them to the point where they can understand where I'm coming from. Not right. necessarily that they think I'm right or anything else, but if I can just make them understand that what we're talking about is a logical progression, that there's, you know, there's actually something to it. I think that you can get someone to say, okay, well, I see where you're coming from. And that's all I care about. That's all I really want at the end of the day. I can't expect everyone to be converted into the quote unquote believer camp.
Yeah. The, believer thing drives me crazy. Yeah. So when it comes to this whole aspect of Bigfooting, you're mentioning here the wood ape, which mm-hmm. might as well segue here to the NAWAC, which I wanted to save for later in the show. But as long as you're talking about wood ape, I want to talk about the NAWAC, because anyone who follows the Sasquatch blog, which I started, one of the reasons I am into Bigfooting and actually put some credence into the possibility of there being an undiscovered primate in North America is because of your Bigfoot show episodes that centered around Area X. And in fact, I mean, before I was even aware that there were like Bigfoot Facebook groups and any of that stuff, I was out there trolling the not trolling in a bad way, but just kind of lurking on the Bigfoot forums, reading the NAWAC discussions and all that stuff. And the NAWAC, and specifically Area X, is what made me kind of start thinking this could be legitimate. This could be a real phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I want to know, I want you to tell us, first of all, about the NAWC, who is involved, what their mission is, and then we'll get into the Area X stuff.
Yeah, the North American Wood Ape Conservancy, the mission of the group is essentially conservancy, education. We're trying to do everything we can to prove that this animal is real so that it and its habitat can be protected. I mean, I'm paraphrasing the mission statement. There's also a piece in there about education. So when we talk about what's happening in Area X, either on the Bigfoot forums or on Reddit now or on the Bigfoot show or even here, all of that is sort of in service to our educational mandate, which is to tell people about what we're experiencing. It's not, I don't believe my job is to convince anyone Bigfoot's real when I'm speaking for the NAWAC. I know they are because I've seen them and I've experienced them, and I can come to no other conclusion than that they're real. And when I've heard this several times, what you just said, that, you know, it's because of what you said on the Bigfoot show, and that really, that means a lot to me. I mean, there's a lot of, I find that even though there's a great deal of responsibility when you hear people say things like that to you, like, because of you, I think this is really interesting. And the thing that I also want to point out is I don't believe that anyone should listen to my words and the experiences of those in my group and take that as proof of anything. I think that we don't have proof at this point. All I can say is these are the things that are happening to us, and I'm happy to answer questions about them, but I think people need to come to the conclusions that they're going to come to. The people in the group, we're made up of, there are biologists in the group. We have former law enforcement in the group. We have quite a bit of former military in the group. We have teachers in the group. We're really a cross-section of citizens. We refer to ourselves as citizen naturalists. That's what we are. We're naturalists. If you look at the term, you don't need to be have a PhD or anything to be a naturalist. You're just someone who's really interested in nature and trying to, you know, protect it and study it. And so we're doing, we're following in the footsteps of generations of citizen naturalists, I think, people that would go out and try to document bird species or dig up fossils and document those. There are things that people do, just regular people, prior to official sort of official, I just said official, you know, scientific interest. That's what we're trying to do. And I don't think we're doing it in a perfect way, but I think we're doing it the best way we can. So our mission at this point is to document behavior, We're fortunate enough to be in a place where they seem to hang out a lot, and I can't tell you why they won't leave the area. That's one of the answers, one of the questions we're trying to get to. But we're fortunate enough to be there where we believe they are quite often, so we have the opportunity to document their behavior. And we'd also like to bring forth undeniable proof, not evidence. I don't want to confuse those two words. We're not about casting another, you know, track or producing another grainy video or fuzzy picture. That's evidence. We're trying to bring forward proof that will establish the animal as undeniably real. And that's kind of what the group's about in a nutshell.
So when you say proof, you're talking about a type specimen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the ways it could go. It could be an animal, either intact or some portion thereof. And some portion thereof could mean that the animal is deceased, or it could mean that it's just injured in a way that you're able to collect some tissue. I don't necessarily subscribe to the view that the only way you can conclusively prove it is by hauling in a big dead one. Mm-hmm. I think that's certainly the most efficient way of doing it. It's not easy, but it would definitely solve the question. I think having a sample large enough to allow multiple successive repeatable DNA analyses that would establish a novel DNA sequence, I think that would do it as well. And you wouldn't need necessarily, you know, a piece of the animal, the morphology, a bone or whatever. You could do that with something smaller. But getting that is just as hard as getting the whole thing or some big chunk of it. So, yeah, we're talking about physical remains of some kind. I mean, you have to either show a novel piece of animal that does not exist in the record anywhere, or bring forth enough of it so that you can get these repeatable DNA samples. You know, that's one of the issues collecting hairs. Hairs are not great for DNA to begin with, but also typically if you only have a hair, when you study it, when you run it through, you know, the analysis, the DNA analysis, it's consumed, it's gone. So you need to have something that multiple labs, multiple scientists can all work with and come to the same conclusions on. That's how science works. It needs to be repeatable. So that's in a nutshell what we're trying to establish. We're trying to either bring forth the animal itself, or a big enough piece to establish that it's real, or that's it.
Yeah. So to the newbie who I like to target this podcast at, Bigfoot community, is this thing, an ongoing war between two factions within the Bigfoot world, and it is the kill no kill debate, right?
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things about the Bigfoot show is listening to you and Scott go back and forth on this topic, mostly because I just find the whole thing very entertaining. Yeah. However, when you get into the Facebook groups, there's a whole nother level to this where, I mean, they can actually turn violent on other people over.
Oh, yeah.
Over the kill, no kill debate.
You know, there's a reason why some hunters are afraid of militant environmentalists, right? I mean, even though you come from what might traditionally be thought of as a very left-leaning position when it comes to killing an animal or whatever, or saving a forest or whatever the issue is, people can be violent for any reason. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there is actually a valid concern out there. There are guys on YouTube that have made videos that are you know, borderline, you know,
psychotic,
felonious threats, right? I mean, there's some scary stuff out there, and I think, and I'm trying to say this as gently as possible, because I do have friends on both sides of the issue, obviously, and I think that for the most part, the desire not to see an animal killed is from a good place, but in my mind, it really boils down to you know, that old Star Trek question about whether or not the needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many. And that's the way I see this. I think one of these animals has to sacrifice or be sacrificed in order to save all the rest of them. I really believe that. If there was a way to do it otherwise. Now, I honestly believe at this point, here's what's going to happen. When we're successful and we've brought out, you know, a piece or whatever, and we've been able to establish this, I'm sure the question will be asked, why did you have to kill one? And it'll be asked by someone who doesn't know any better because they're not hanging out on the Facebook pages you're talking about. My response to that will be that it's because we did not, as a group of people, as a society, we did not pay attention to the evidence that already exists. We have So many footprint casts that, I mean, this is, and if you're talking about almost any other kind of animal in the world, a footprint is a pretty significant piece of evidence. These are basically ignored. And some of them are probably fake, absolutely. But there are a nice chunk in the record that are just cannot be easily addressed as that. I believe there is so much evidence, not proof, but there's so much evidence that indicates there could be an animal there, that there should be studies being going on mm-hmm. right now, and they're not. So this is where we are. We either allow the animal to continue to remain a mystery in an ever-shrinking environment, clearly under pressure, because every animal is in the types of places where we think these guys live, or we try to do something about it. And that's, I think that's the thing that really ties everyone in the NAWC together. We're not all of the same mind politically. We're not all of the same place geographically, but we all want action. We all want something to happen, and we're not willing to wait for either someone else to do it for us or for a random animal to walk in front of a logging truck, which would also be just fine by me. Mm-hmm. But if it hasn't happened in 60 years, it's unlikely to happen in the next 60 years. So people on the other side, you know, the other thing I do, which pisses people off, is I say it isn't really pro-kill, anti-kill. It's pro-science and not, you know, and I don't want to say they're anti-science, but this is how science works. This is how biologists do their work. People will point out an example here or there of an animal that was established with something less than a type specimen, but you're talking about, you know, variations of species that are already proven to exist. What we're having a conversation about is a novel relic hominid. You know, I'm not going, if I cannot establish it with all of the evidence that has already been collected, then it cannot be established any other way. So that's our point of view, and that's what we're trying to do. And this is, I think, we're following as well as we can in the footsteps of science when we're doing this.
Yeah, and I think if nothing else, you and Scott are a good example of the fact that both factions can still remain non-psychotic with each other.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't say friends, because I don't like him that much.
Yeah, I didn't want to use that word. No. All right, so let's talk about Area X, because this is where it seems like a good deal of the NAWAC's activity is taking place. So why don't you tell us what Area X is, where it's located, and then we'll get into some of the stuff that's going on there.
Area X is in the Washtenaw Mountains of Oklahoma. Most people who don't live in Oklahoma, and even a lot of people who do live in Oklahoma, don't know there are mountains there, but there are. They're in the eastern third of the state. They part of the Washtenaw Uplift. It actually extends down to Texas, and it's connected further to the east with the Ozarks. So there are mountains in eastern Oklahoma. And, you know, growing up in California, I don't know that I would call them mountains, but they are technically mountains. So we have been working as a group. Members of our organization have been in the area that we call X since, I believe, 2001. Alton Higgins sort of, quote-unquote, discovered it. He didn't discover it. He just did some good groundwork and good field research and went into areas he thought were likely habitat and struck up conversations with people and was invited into this private property that we call Area X, and where we've been ever since. What's interesting about this place is it's so remote and relatively protected from human incursion that we believe there is a group of animals there that is there year round. And I really don't know what this means as far as how, because, you know, a lot of sightings of wood apes, Bigfoot, happen along roads. They're singular animals. They seem to be sort of like these hit and run, not physically hit and run, but like I just see it and then it's gone. Whereas what we experience in X, there's clearly a group of animals that are there year-round. I think we have, at this point, enough experience to tell us that. I think it's because it's a great place to be if you're trying to stay away from humans, if you're trying to find a place to raise your young. I think it's a pretty good spot. Now, that doesn't mean that you still won't see the occasional animal walking across a road. If you think about gorillas, gorilla society, they live in these troops, and the males will either become submissive to the dominant male and let him have all the women and all the fun, or they'll leave. And then these males, if they leave, they become rogues, and sometimes they'll collect themselves into smaller groups of just the guys, until one of them grows the cojones, almost literally, to start collecting his own women. So it could be that Bigfoot, women, it sounds funny. Bigfoot could be the same way. They could be that they have these groups that are controlled, sort of like a guerrilla troop, by some sort of dominant animal, and that others sort of spin off when there's no more room for them, or they have to leave because of conflict within the group. It could be that what people see along the side of the road are these rogue animals that are looking for a place to settle down. They're looking for a good place to live, or trying to find eligible bachelorettes out mm-hmm. there in the wilderness. I don't know. I mean, I this is all speculation. What I do know is that in Area X, there are a group of animals that have been there for more than 10 years, and as of yet have shown no sign of leaving. And so it's a unique opportunity for a group like ours. And I would say that it's incredible luck. I do feel very fortunate that we have the ability to work there. But it wasn't luck that brought us there. It was, as I said, Alton studying maps, looking for good habitat, talking to people, and making the relationships that made our work there possible.
I got to ask you, just to satisfy my own curiosity, because I've wondered this for a long time. So the Ouachita Mountains in Oklahoma were hammered with like a pretty heavy ice storm past winter. So I'm curious, like, just from your experiences there, and I know you guys, I don't think you're in there year round, right? Or are you?
Well, this past year we were there almost year round. We were doing a lot of work on the structure that we stay in over the summer. So we were there quite a bit more often this winter. And actually we had several trips in that were only to clear the road after those ice storms. The ice storms were horrific. There were so many mature trees that were lost. The road in was impassable for miles, and it took a lot of work to clear it out and make it passable again. So we were there this particular year. We were there quite a bit in the off season when we normally wouldn't be. Typically the big push for us is right now, is in the summer. We'll have someone on site for 3 months. We are there sometimes in the winter this past year quite a bit. And the ice storms were horrible. They were horrible.
At a guess, what is going on in there during the winter? Where are these things living when the weather is so, I mean, do you think they go into caves? Are they building cabins?
Everything I'm going to say, yes, I think they're building sort of Lincoln log cabins.
Uh-huh. I'm on the same page. So
yeah. This is a total guess. All I know, here's what we say, and this is part of like the mystery in my mind of Area X. They don't need to be near us. If you look on a map and you look at where we are and the area that we move around in, it's relatively small. It's a postage stamp inside, this wilderness area that we work out of. And wilderness, there's a technical definition of wilderness. It is not technically wilderness, but if you're there, it feels like a wilderness. It's pretty rough. Mm-hmm. They could just go a quarter mile away in almost any direction and never see us again, but they don't. So I think in the winter, that's what they do. I think they go a mile or so away. The leaves drop on all those trees. You can see a really long ways in the winter. There's really no cover for them to hide behind other than, rocks. And as I said, you can see a really long way. So they're not going to sneak up on you in the wintertime. In the summer, it's like Vietnam in there. It's incredibly lush and thick, and they can come right up on you. I know this from personal experience. And you'll have no idea that they're there. So I don't know where they go in the winter. They don't have to go far and be completely sort of outside of our area of awareness. Mm-hmm. They probably hunker down. I don't think there are a lot of caves in the area. I've been around. There's like overhangs and stuff like that. But caves, I've been told that there might be a cave or two. I've never seen one. I've never been shown one. So I think that they're probably, hunkering down inside overhangs or inside sort of boulder formations, just trying to get some shelter. They might make crude shelters by pulling, pine boughs and things like that over themselves. I really don't know. We found
pitching a tent.
They could be pitching tents. There's an REI, and they seem like the typical REI kind of customer, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So they might have a membership and
Dick's. They could stop by Dick's.
They could. They seem a little more granola than that, though.
That's true.
The guys that shop at Dick's are
They're living up to the namesake.
I'll just leave it at that. No, I shop at Dick's, but it's convenient. So I don't know where they went. I wish I knew where they went. I'm going to go in there this winter at some point, and I've never been there in the winter, but I'm going to go this year because I have this drone, and I'm hoping that I can fly it really long ways when the leaves are down, and I'm hoping that it will show me something that I can't see in the summertime. And so I will go in there either in the fall or the winter, sometime after the leaves have dropped. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But I personally have not been there in the winter yet.
Okay. Area X activity. I know there's been a ton, so it's hard to probably narrow it down to just one thing. But I want you to talk about, let's say, two things that you think are the best evidence for you that there are Bigfoots living in there. And I'm not talking about necessarily your own sighting, because I know you had a sighting in there, but I'm talking about, you know, two incidences that really seal it for you.
Well, one of them isn't a specific incident. It's the fact that we get rocks thrown at us a lot. And these are rocks anywhere from like marble sized all the way up to, I mean, last week we had a team in there and there was rocks the size of melons. I don't even know if those are rocks anymore. Those are baby boulders being thrown. And the thing about the rocks, I mean, something has to throw a rock, right? So if you go down the logical list of things that throw rocks, you've got people. I know that raccoons will throw small rocks, but these are not being thrown by raccoons. So you kind of run out pretty quickly of things that can throw a rock. Bears don't throw rocks. They don't have the ability to throw a rock. So you're sort of stuck with things that have hands and fingers and thumbs and stuff like that. And then you can say, okay, well, fine. Just because I have a hand doesn't mean I'm a Bigfoot. I could be a guy. And then you have to say, well, how does this guy get around in the dark in that environment without breaking his neck just so he can throw rocks at a bunch of guys sitting in cabins? And then, of course, oh, by the way, we're trying to shoot one. So who is going to throw a rock at me in the dark, in the middle of nowhere for 3 months straight, and potentially get himself shot just for the fun of it? It doesn't make any sense. So I think that the rocks, I mean, dude, I've been standing by a fire ring. I have heard the rock coming in, you know, hitting leaves, you know, sort of moving as it's moving in sort of horizontally. I've seen the rock come to rest on the ground by my feet, not 6 feet away. I've walked over to it. I picked it up and I've thrown it back. I cannot explain that any other way. You know, this is, and this has happened dozens of times. You know, it happens all of the time. And again, I'm saying these things, and if I was hearing these for the first time, I would find it incredible. And it is incredible. It's fantastic, literally fantastic. But it happens. So the rock thing is sort of issue number one. Specific events. I'd have to go to the sightings of others. You know, we've had multiple sightings of one type of animal. We believe that it is an animal, and that's the one we call Old Gray because it's a big and it's gray. It's like this color of a jackrabbit. Mm-hmm. There's been so many sightings now by people in our group, not even counting mine, so much better than my sighting. If you were profoundly skeptical, you could be talking about guys in monkey suits hoaxing you. And again, I would go back to, besides the practical problem of moving around in that environment in a monkey suit in the summer when it's 8,000 degrees and 400% humidity, to what end? And just so that one of us could shoot you. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I think that those, I mean, we find tracks too. We don't find tracks as often as you would think, just because the ground there is really not good for casting tracks. We see signs of their movement. You know, if you're a really good tracker, you can see where animals go without having to actually see a track in the ground. But we do find the occasional track that is sort of a classic Bigfoot track, but it's they're few and far between. We picked up some hairs last year. They may have been human hairs. That's the Sykes report came out, and one of our samples was in the Sykes report. We don't know for certain that it was our hair that he determined to be human, because he says it's from Texas and ours was from Oklahoma. So we're trying to get some clarification on that. It's probably our hair. So that's not really proof, but it shows that we're trying to collect things. So I think that the fullness of all of the experiences that we've had, This is part of the reason why I have at this point in my time, even without my sighting, I don't have any doubt left about whether or not this animal is real or there.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and repost somewhere, probably on the blog with this, alongside this this episode. I'll probably repost the link to the... I did a blog post a while ago where I tried to collect all the links to everything relating to Area X and NWAC.
Oh, I could totally use that.
And I think I'm pretty sure it was you, already did use it.
I did? Excellent.
I swear you did.
Because I did on the... I know on the Bigfoot forums, I created a post... where I did the exact same thing. I collected everything I could find, and I didn't steal from you at that point, I don't think.
No, I'm pretty sure you didn't, but I know you shared... It had to have been you, because whoever did shared it on the Bigfoot Show page.
Oh,
so right. I'll have to link that again, but a lot of that stuff will... because we don't have time. We don't have, like, the...
No, you know, I would go back
into
and...
everything.
I don't remember the episode number, but it's called Nothing But the Truth. The second half of that episode is right after... Well, not right after, but the first time I talked publicly about what I experienced there a couple of years ago, that's probably the best place to start. And then after that, they're all clearly labeled. If you go to thebigfootshow.com and you look for the tags for Area X, they're all clearly labeled there. You can just find all the episodes that are related to that.
Exactly. So I'll post that up. So if you're a listener and you've never really paid any attention to that stuff, it'll be very interesting. Moving outside of the NAWC AC, Area X, I want to talk about... something that I've never heard you really go into on the show, and I don't even know if you have an opinion on this, but I want to know what your take is on the East Coast Bigfoot, because I'm on the East Coast, and I'm always curious what others think, especially people who aren't from this area, what they think of the entire subject of Bigfoot being here in Ohio, or even in New York, or wherever.
Well, you know, I grew up in... on the West Coast, and I, even though I saw Boggy Creek, it never really clicked in my head that Boggy Creek wasn't in California or Oregon or Washington. So I kind of had this idea that the only people who were interested in Bigfoot lived in the on the West Coast, in the Pacific Northwest. And when I started the Bigfoot forums, I found that most of them were from the South or from places like Ohio. That just blew me away. That I never even occurred to me that there would be people who had that interest. And but even then, I thought they had the interest in the animal that didn't live there. I started hanging out with these guys in Texas, and I realized that there's this rich culture of Bigfoot in East Texas and Eastern Oklahoma. So I don't discount anything. What I would say is there habitat? You know, is there a place for an animal like this to live? And if so, and enough of it, then I think it's possible the animal could live there. I don't know. You know, you say New York. You know, I people think Times Square, all of New York State is not like Times Square. Right. You know, I mean, I've driven through New York State. It is unbelievably beautiful, and there's all kinds of forest in New York. I think it's possible that there's some remnant collection of these animals there. I think that Ohio, I actually ascribe to that the Ohio Howl, I think that's a genuine Bigfoot recording. It says it right there in the name, Ohio. So there, if it's genuine and it's from Ohio, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in Ohio. There's such, again, there's a culture of it there. There's a rich sort of collection of events that have happened over the years. I'm not going to discount anything at this point. You know, I think that there are people in this field, there are prominent people in this field who will pretty much discount anything east of the Rockies. And I can't understand how that works. I like to think of myself as a logical guy. I like to think of myself as a skeptical person. But if the habitat is there, then they may be there. Right. I think that it's and you can't just say they're not because it's not where you think they are.
So what about Minnesota then?
Oh, well, there's not a lot of sightings in Minnesota, mostly because in northern Minnesota, there aren't a lot of people. There are some up there. Of course, the famous Snellgrove Lake is right across the border up in Canada. That's the one that was famously on. It wasn't Finding Bigfoot. It was Monster Quest. I think that it's possible that they're there. My question is, I don't know what the hell they do in the winter, because the winters in Minnesota are like grade A serious winters. And what the hell do they do? Where do they go? Are they moving in and out of Minnesota? Do they come up? Do they come here in the summer and then move somewhere else? I can't answer that question. All I know is that the habitat is there. There are enough reports of sightings that I think it's possible they're there. I know that northern Wisconsin, or the UP of Michigan, which is very, very similar to northern Minnesota from a habitat standpoint, has a rich collection, a rich tradition of people seeing hairy bipeds. So I don't discount it. There doesn't seem to be nearly the intensity as you find in places like eastern Oklahoma. You know, there's a place called Honubby in Oklahoma, and Honubby has their famous Bigfoot Festival, and there's Bigfoot signs, and you go into any store around Honubby, and there are, you know, magazines and things like that about Bigfoot. I mean, it's one of these really sort of well-kept secrets to most people that it exists. So there's nothing like that in northern Minnesota, though I did go into a store up there once wearing one of my old TBRC t-shirts, and the guy who was checking us out said, "Oh, Bigfoot, huh?" I'm like, "Yeah, Bigfoot." And he's like, "You know, there's Bigfoot around here." I'm like, "Yeah, I've heard." So, you know, there's an awareness of it up there. So I think it's possible. I again, is there habitat? Have people said they've seen them? I think that I understand the skeptic, and I use that in a very general term, the skeptic's position that sightings are not proof of anything. They're anecdotes. They absolutely are anecdotes, but I think they're also sort of the fundamental building block of science is anecdotal observation. And if enough people say they see something, and if you actually talk to these people and they seem reasonable, I think that you have to start giving that some credence. And I think there are enough people in Minnesota that say they've seen them. So, yeah.
Let me think here. I'm running out of questions and I'm running out of time, so I got to narrow it down because I know I still have a decent list here of questions I wanted to ask. Okay, I'm going to finish up with the my favorite topic in Bigfootdom, which is the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Yes.
And I know it's your favorite. I mean, you cannot get enough of talking about it.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of irony in what I'm saying there, sarcasm.
I did get Munz's book.
Did you?
I look forward. Yeah, I just ordered it today when I saw your link. I'll put that on the Bigfoot Show page too.
Okay.
So I'm excited about that. Here's what I feel about the Patterson-Gimlin film. I think it's in all likelihood genuine, and in general, here's where I am about all kinds of things related to Bigfoot. I find myself less and less interested in having philosophical sort of squishy conversations about whether or not Bigfoot is real or could it be real. The more that I've done this and the more that I've been out there, I find myself turning into one of these guys that I used to hate when I first started the forums, who just would come in and is like, "You guys are all crazy. They're real. Shut up." You know, that's kind of how I feel, but I'm trying not to be that guy, you know? So like because I know they're real, and I refuse to get into any kind of debate on the internet with anyone who doesn't believe they're real. Like, it's not my job to convince you that they're real. Like, mm-hmm. I do not need to do that. Is like talking into sand. I'm just not going to do it. The PGF, I feel, is kind of the same way. And the reason I like the PGF film, besides all of the reasons that people say they like the PGF film, how did he do it? How is this a person in a suit? How does the person fit in this suit? I think Bill Munz has done some fantastic work in demonstrating that it would be well nigh impossible for a guy to be inside the figure. I put the mask on at the last Texas Bigfoot conference in front of, you know, hundreds of people. And it you know, he's done a lot of work to make this thing, you know, a realistic representation of what's in the film. And there really is no way that it works. You know, if you put it down so that you can see through the eye sockets, then it's sloping forward. The geometry doesn't make any sense to be a person. So I think that no one else has done it. You know, it's been all this time. And every time you see... Well, before the advent of technology that allowed people to make them in their computers, when you would see a film or a video of Bigfoot, it was always obviously fake. It was just so ridiculous. And the PGF, if you've spent some time looking at these things, doesn't look like any of those. It doesn't look obviously fake to me. So there was always that. And then there was a photograph that was taken in Oklahoma by a Native American there. That's we sort of refer to it as the Oklahoma Prairie photos. And Alton Higgins did a lot of work investigating these photos and the area where they were taken. And the animal that you see in this photograph is like 8.5 feet tall. It's gigantic. And if you reverse it, because it was looking a different direction, if you reverse it and adjust them to scale, it looks like a big buffed out male version of the Patterson-Gimlin film subject. So in my mind, there's some corroboration to the PGF. Has the PGF ever been duplicated? Has someone else ever done it? No, but there's this other animal that looks a lot like it from a really far ways away, and from a guy who just isn't sophisticated. You know, he's a, the guy who took these photos is a great guy, but he's not a costume maker. He's not demonstrated over the years that he has sort of the ability or the inclination of a hoaxer. If he is, again, like Patterson, this is the only thing he ever did that's sort of like that. What we know from hoaxers and from charlatans in general is they like to repeat, you know, their activities because they really like what they're doing it for, is they're for the attention and all of the people and the interest. So they tend to be serial at it. The guy who took these photos has never done anything like it again, and really just sort of dropped off the map.
I'll have to post a link to the – I know the NAWC has something on their website where it kind of shows the size comparison and all that.
Yeah, there's an article on our site. In fact, I think it's still on the homepage down towards the bottom. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that is nice corroboration to the PGF, I think. And then, of course, there's the people that I know who have seen the gray one in Area X that they say looks just like Patty from the back. We had one member who saw it walking away from him at fairly close range. It was dark. It was illuminated with a flashlight, but it was at fairly close range. And he said it looks – it's just fat and wide all the way down, just like Patty. Great big ass, big chunky legs, you know, rolls of fat on its back, just like Patty was. So now I know individuals, and I know them well, who have seen animals that look just like Patty. So does that mean the PGF is real? I think that ultimately there's no way to know for sure that the PGF is real. I think in my own personal estimation, based on all of the evidence that I've just said and some other stuff that I probably hadn't gotten around to because I forgot about it because I'm old, I think the PGF is real. And at the end of the day, the reason why I'm talking about it on the Bigfoot Show especially is it doesn't really matter anymore, mm-hmm. right, if the PGF is real. It's been 47 years, right? It has done nothing for the field. It's the thing that you know they always use to whenever they talk about Bigfoot, they show an image of the PGF. It doesn't really mean anything anymore. I think it's real. I think that Roger Patterson has been maligned all these years. I think Bob Gimlin has been maligned. I think that there is no evidence, really any significant evidence, that it's not real. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't prove anything. And it's also, I think, classic, you know, A1 exhibit why a photograph of this animal will never be enough. Especially today. There's incredible things showing up on the internet that are computer generated, you know? I mean, so I think we're past the point, if we were ever at a point where a photograph could do it. I think we're well past it at this point. Because the PGF didn't do it, and I think it's the best thing that's ever been done.
So in terms of Bigfooting, if you're still here in 5 years and you have not yet brought in a specimen, they have not yet proved that Bigfoot is real, are you still going to be as invested in it as you are today? I mean, where do you see yourself in 5 years if you're still on this quest?
It's a good question. You know, I don't think that what I believe now, I don't see why that would change. You know, I don't know why what I believe would change. This year especially, and I'm going to kind of, I should be clear that I was going to say this year especially, I've put a lot into it. I mean, I've been down there twice already. I have to drive a long ways to get there. I'm going to be going down again this year, and I'm prepared to go at any moment if we have been successful in collecting the evidence that we need, the proof that we need. It's a strain professionally. It's a strain with your family. And what I've gone through is a small fraction of what a lot of other people in our group have gone through. There are people in our group that do nothing with their free time but go to X. They have no vacations with their family. They every long weekend they are there. They are completely invested in answering this question. And so what I have to put up with is insignificant compared to what they put up with. But how long can you do this? How long can you make these investments personally and physically in this pursuit? And I don't know. I hope long enough to answer the question. But I don't know. If we haven't been successful in 5 years, I suspect that I'll still be doing it. But I don't know for certain, just because I don't know what life is going to do to me, you know?
Right.
But I think that I would still be there because I believe that the people that I'm with, a significant number of them will still be there. Doing it, and I am there for them, You know, I'm there to support them, and they're there to support me. So we're really doing this as a team, and you know, you have to be there for your team. So I think I'll still be there. Right. I hope I don't have to be doing
this. Exactly.
Know, hopefully in 5 years I get to go down there with an entirely different mindset, right? Mm-hmm. Or find the other X's, because clearly this cannot be the only X in the entire area of North America. There's got to be more of them out there. Hopefully I'm spending time looking for, you know, X2 and X3 and X4, because the answer is done, that the question has been answered. I'm hoping that literally could happen like at any time. Or it may not happen for 5 years, because it really is, you know, there's an awful amount of luck involved.
Yeah. All right. Brian, thanks for coming on the show. It's been awesome talking to you. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Seth Breedslove. We just set up a Sasquatch Facebook page today, so go on
just
there.
Just today you did that.
Just today, this morning. Go on there and like that if you feel so inclined. We also need your ratings and reviews on iTunes, so head over to iTunes and do that. And Brian, you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. The Bigfoot Show is on Twitter, at The Bigfoot Show. Mm-hmm. I personally am on Twitter, IDPK Brian, mm-hmm. Is my handle there. Facebook as well, The Bigfoot Show at Facebook. TheBigfootShow.com. Mm-hmm. WoodApe.com. WoodApe.org, I should say, is the official address of the NAWAC. Lots of good information there, including all of our public sightings in the database. You can sort of browse a map of all the sightings on that Google Map. It's kind of cool. Do you still hang out with the guys from Rune 5, or have you sort of
I left the group. We had a falling out over Bigfoot, actually. They don't
really. It was Bigfoot. That's what they had.
They don't. They no kill.
Well, I'll tell you. I think that it really shows in the music. You brought something special to that group, and yeah, it's their loss.
Yeah,
all of our losses, actually.